श्री श्री श्रीमरे श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल। सर्वेत भक्त वृंद की जय। आगवे श्री असमदवते आगवे श्री असमदवते आगवे श्री असमदवते आगवे श्री श्री गुरु गौरा ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 2, Maharaj Nimi meets the nine Yogendras. Text 32 and 33. Word meaning, Sri Narada Uvacha. Sri Narada said, Evam thus, te, they, Nimina, by King Nimi, Prishtaha, questioned, Vasudeva, O Vasudeva, Mahattamaha, those best of saints, Pratipuja, offering him words of respect in return, Abruvan, they spoke, Pritya, affectionately, Sasadasya, who was accompanied by the members of the sacrificial assembly, Ritvijam, and by the priests, Nripam, to the king. Sri Narada Uvacha, Evam te nimina prishta, Vasudeva mahattama, Pratipuja bhruvan pritya, Sadasyartvijam. Wait a minute, am I missing a syllable here? Sadasyartvijam. Okay. Sadasyartvijam. Am I missing a syllable here? I keep. Sadasyartvijam. Sadasyartvijam nripam. Oh, I'm still going, hold on. Sri Narada Uvacha, Evam te nimina prishta, Vasudeva mahattama, Pratipuja bruvan pritya, Sasadasyartvijam nripam, Srinarubhacha, Evam te nimina prishta, Vasudeva mahattama, Pratipuja bruvan pritya, Sasadasyartvijam nripam. Sri Narada Uvacha, Evam te nimina prishta, Vasudeva mahattama, Pratipuja bhruvan pritya, Sadasya tirtham. Sri Narada Uvacha, Evam te nimina prishta, Vasudeva mahattama,
te puja vandita sadasya kritam sinaru vacha evante nina prishta vasudeva mahatma Sati Pujhya Bhuvan Krishna Sadasya Vidyam Nipam
Sadasya Vidyam Nipam
Ladies
Srinarda Vata
Srinarda Vata
Evam
Teni Nina Krishna Vasudeva Mahatama Prati Pujya Bhruvan Pritya Sasadasya Trinam Nirpam
Srinarvacha
Evam Deni Nina Krishta Vasudeva Mahatama Prati Pujya Bhruvan Pritya Sasadasya Tujam Rupam. Translation. Sri Narada said, O Vasudeva, when Maharaj Nimi had thus inquired from the nine Yogendras about devotional service to the Lord, those best of saintly persons sincerely thanked the king for his questions and spoke to him with affection in the presence of the members of the sacrificial assembly and the Brahmana priests. Purport. According to Sri Daraswami, not only the king, but also the members of the assembly and the priests conducting the sacrifice were all devoted to hearing and chanting the glories of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sages, beginning with Kavi, will now each speak in turn, answering the questions of the king. Text 33. Sri Kavir Vacha Manye Kutaschid Vayam Machutasya Padam Bujo Pasana Matra Nityam Udvigna Budhe Rasaratma Bhava Vishwatmana Yatra Nivartate Dihi. Sri Kavi said, I consider that one whose intelligence is constantly disturbed by his falsely identifying himself with the temporary material world, can achieve real freedom from fear only by worshiping the lotus feet of the infallible Lord. In such devotional service, all fear ceases entirely. Purport. In the opinion of Srila Sridhar Swami, the word asad atma bhavat in this verse indicates that the living entity is constantly disturbed by fear because he identifies his eternal self with the temporary material body and its paraphernalia. Similarly, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has stated, Bhakti Pratikula Deha Vihadishva Asaktim. Because of one's attachment to one's temporary body and so-called home, family, friends, and so on, one's intelligence is always disturbed by fear, and one is unable to appreciate or practice pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So-called religious activities executed in the bodily conception of life are always accompanied by fear and anxiety about the ultimate result. But pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead frees one from fear and anxiety because it is executed on the platform of Vaikuntha, or the spiritual plane, where there is no fear or anxiety. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the process of bhakti yoga is so powerful that even in the stage of sadhana bhakti, in which one is practicing devotional service through rules and regulations, the neophyte can have a direct experience of fearlessness by the mercy of the Lord. As one's devotional service becomes mature, the Lord reveals himself to the devotee, and all fear is totally vanquished forever. Every living entity has a natural propensity to serve God, but because of false identification with the temporary body, one loses touch with this pure constitutional propensity, and instead inauspiciously becomes attached to temporary sense gratification in the form of body, home, family, and so on. The result of such false attachment is continuing distress, which can be eradicated only by devotional service to the Supreme Lord. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has quoted the following verse. Tavad bhayam davina deha surin nimittam choka spriha paribhavo pipulasya lobha tavan mamitya saravagraha arti mulam yavan nategrim abhayam pravinita loka. O my Lord, the people of the world are embarrassed by all material anxieties. They are always afraid. They always try to protect wealth, body, and friends. They are filled with lamentation and unlawful desires and paraphernalia. And they avariciously base their undertakings on the perishable conceptions of I and mine. As long as they do not take shelter of your safe lotus feet, they are full of such anxieties. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.6. Om Agyanatim Aranjasya Dhyananjana Shavakaya Chakshurin Militanena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. This is the beginning of the response from the Navayogendras. You heard at the beginning of this chapter something about who they were. They're sons of Rishabdev. Rishabdev had 100 sons. The eldest was Bharat Maharaj. Now King Nimi, he's the son of Ikshwaku, who is the son of Vaivaswata Manu. So we know in Bhagavad Gita, we hear about how Krishna spoke to the sun god spoke to Manu, that's his son. The son of Vivaswan is Vaivaswata Manu, who had 100 sons, and one of those sons is Ikshvaku, who was born from a sneeze, right? And that's why his name kind of sounds like a sneeze. At least it does to me. I hope that's not offensive, but Ikshvaku. It always makes me think of that. I'm sorry. So the son of this Ikshvaku was King Nimi, or one of his sons at least. So these are all devotees. Evam parampara praptam imam raja shayovidu. Krishna speaks about parampara in the context of kings. In fact, this the whole framework of the Bhagavatam, is the vanshas or dynasties in the course of delineating the members of different dynasties, then the speaker of the Bhagavatam, whoever is speaking at the moment, comes upon different names, and then often Pariksit Maharaj asks, well, what was that about? Who was that person you just mentioned? And because sometimes in speaking to the members of the dynasty, Shukadev Goswami or Maitreya Rishi, whoever is speaking, will just say a line or two about them. And then the person hearing will say, can you tell me more about that? So the Bhagavatam, at least all the way up to the 10th canto, is all about this. In fact, the last two chapters of the 9th canto are practically all just the son of this person was that person, son of this person was that person. It goes on and on and on until you get to Krishna. Then you have some more verses about Krishna. So one of the reasons why this is there in the Bhagavatam, because just hearing their names, this is one of the topics of a Mahapurana. There are two kinds of Puranas. One of the Mahapurana has 10 subjects, and an ordinary Purana has 5 subjects. So among the 10 subjects of a Mahapurana is this delineation of the dynasties. It's history, Vedic history. We often hear in the Bhagavatam that this is purifying to hear. Just to hear the names of these kings is purifying. Same thing at the beginning of the fifth canto, we're about to hear about the description of the universe. And it says there, by hearing this, you'll be purified. Or by hearing about all these rivers, there's a whole list of different rivers. So it says, listen to this and you'll get purified by this. So to me, this is kind of bewildering. How is it purifying to hear about? Well, it's Krishna's creation. That's one thing. It's part of Krishna. We're not impersonalists. We don't say Brahman, Satya, Jagan, Mitya. Everything Krishna creates is pure in a sense, because Krishna is pure and everything that comes from him is pure, because it's there to fulfill his purpose. So anyway, this is King Nimi. He's now going to, he asked only a couple of questions, but each of the nine Yogendras is going to speak something. These are the two questions. Is it two or three? Anyway, just a few. I wrote them down here. He says, O Brahmana, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I still wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any mortal who faithfully hears about them is freed from all kinds of fear. We'll see how this topic of fear just is very prominent here. So that's verse 7 of this chapter. And then, actually this is, I'm sure this is Vasudeva speaking to Narada Muni before the Navayogendras come onto the scene. So then Vasudeva says, My Lord, you are always true to your vow. Please instruct me clearly so that by your mercy I may easily free myself from material existence, which is full of many dangers and keeps us constantly bound in fear. So these are the two things that Vasudeva asked Narada Muni. And then Narada Muni says, Well, I'll tell you, I'll give the answer by citing the Navayogendras. That, yeah, he says here, to explain devotional service of the Lord, sages have related the ancient history of the conversation between the great soul King Videha, or Nimi, and the sons of Vrishabha. So that's how Narada Muni introduces them. So great sages have answered these same questions by citing this conversation between King Nimi and the Navayogendras. So then King Nimi, he asks the Navayogendras, These are his two questions. These are just lines from the longer verses. He asks, I ask you to kindly tell me what the supreme good is. That was the last verse I gave the other day. Yoga, or kshemam. I forget what the other word was. Supreme good. And please speak about how one engages in devotional service of the Lord. So these are his questions. He asks only these two questions, and now the Navayogendras are going to speak a lot, actually. Several chapters of this Srimad Bhagavatam in response to these two things. What is the supreme good, and how does one engage in devotional service? So in today's verse, Kavi this is the very beginning. Kavi Rishi, he's beginning. He says, I consider that one whose intelligence is constantly disturbed by his falsely identifying himself with the temporary material world can achieve real freedom from fear only by worshipping the lotus feet of the infallible Supreme Lord. In such devotional service, all fear ceases entirely. Now this is interesting because King Nimi didn't say anything about fear, but Vasudeva did. He asked Narada Muni how to get free of fear, this material existence, which characterizes material existence. So in the purport, we hear from Sridhar Swami, just one line, and then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So he gives the reason for fear. Now, well, there's a very famous verse coming up, Bhayam Dutiya Vinibeshita Shadi Shadabhita Siddhi Pariva Smriti, which is coming up in just a few verses. So that's an answer to the question, what's the source of fear? But here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says this, Bhakti Pratikul. Deha Griharishu Asaktim. He says, Bhakti Pratikul means is against or hinders bhakti. What hinders bhakti? Deha Geha Adishu Asaktim. Attachment to Deha and Geha, which means this body and my home. Or in the translation it says, attachment to the temporary body and so-called home, family, friends, and so on. What that's bhakti pratikul. Then it says that one whose intelligence is always disturbed by fear, or because of attachment to this, because of attachment to these things, one is always in fear. And one is unable to appreciate or practice pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So when I read this, because then it says just after this, pure devotional service to the personality of Godhead frees one from fear. So if you're attached to family and so on, then you can't practice devotional service. You can't appreciate it. But how do you get free from this fear? By practicing devotional service. So how does this work here? Kind of got me confused. So, but then it says, for one thing, we have this phrase, practicing, one cannot appreciate or practice pure devotional service. So this threw me off a little bit. I'm sorry, sometimes I overthink things, I'm sure. But does practice pure devotional service mean execute pure devotional service? Or does it mean practice in the sense of sadhana bhakti? Janmashtami Prabhu likes to make the point that we're practicing uttama bhakti. What we're doing is uttama bhakti. We're practicing it. So, and also this idea that Prabhupada, he said all of my followers are pure devotees. My understanding of what this means is that when we come to the temple here, we don't sit down and practice pranayama. We don't worship the deities, the demigods. So we don't throw in karmakanda, we don't throw in jnanakanda, or yoga, asana yoga, and so on, ashtanga yoga. We don't do any of those things. And we don't think that we have to do them to get perfection. What is that? Shraddha shabde vishvas kohi sudrina nishchay krishna bhakti kaile sarva karma krita hai. So shraddha, our faith, which we're supposed to have, is all I have to do is chant Hare Krishna and follow Sri Prabhupada. I don't think that if I stop worshiping the demigods, then I'm not going to get perfection. Or if I don't practice Ashtanga Yoga, we don't have this anxiety or fear. We're convinced, I think most of us are at least convinced of this. Maybe I have problems doing it, but at least I don't think there's something missing. So this is my understanding of what it means that all my disciples are pure devotees, because this is their understanding. They've accepted this principle that all you have to do is follow the process of devotional service and you'll get perfection. So it seems to me, now it says here though, that if you're attached to family, body and your family, then you can't even appreciate devotional service. So it seems like things don't happen automatically. Now this is a point that we made. You have to somehow apply yourself. I've mentioned before, somewhere it's stated, I think it's in one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books, that there's five kinds of mercy. Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, Krishna, and Atma. Atma means your own self. So you get mercy from these outside sources, Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, and Krishna, but you have to help yourself too. So there's part of devotional service which you might say is bootstrapping. We kind of have to lift ourselves up. We have to have some initiative ourselves. I was just reading last night. Sometimes I don't take enough notes because I read so much and then I forget. Where did I see that? But I have different files of some notes. So last night I said, let me read through some of these. So I had some notes on one book, I think it's the Tattva Viveka by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Tattva Viveka, does that ring a bell? Tattva Viveka, right? So there he explains that this idea of Shraddha, like I was explaining, we have some Shraddha, that this is, we appreciate devotional service. So that Shraddha, there's two kinds of Sukriti. One is called Nitya and the other one is called Naimittika. Yeah. So Nitya Sukriti means basically Sadhu Sangha, or some connection with devotional service. One gets Sukriti that over many lifetimes it accumulates to the point where one gets Shraddha, faith in what we call Shraddha, faith in devotional service. And the other kind of Naimittika Sukriti is Karmakanda, basically. So you don't, it's not that kind of Sukriti that gives you Shraddha, it's the other kind, Sadhu Sangha. And it may take many lifetimes of that kind of sangha that one gets. Now maybe it's a gyata sukriti, but accidentally But it may take many lifetimes. After accumulating many lifetimes, one will get some faith that I have to practice devotional service. So when we come to Krishna consciousness, we have to have a little bit of faith that attachment to this body and attachment to everything connected with this body is not a good thing. If I want to advance in spiritual life, I have to become detached from this bodily conception. Aham mameti. Aham and mama, basically these two things. Aham, I, and mama, these things are mine, everything I come in contact with. And this is described here in this verse as the source of fear. Attachment, now generally, it's often put, one thing we'll find often in the Bhagavatam, that spiritual life is about renunciation and material life means family life. It's often, these two are often equated. Being a grihastha means you're in Maya, basically, from the perspective of the Bhagavatam. Because it is, if you want to enjoy life, then you get married and you have children and you have a family and you have your social life and so on. It all expands from that. So that's why it's considered synonymous. But here it said that's the source of fear. Attachment to your body and all of these things, your geha, your family life, that's why you're afraid. That's why we have so much fear. And who doesn't have fear? I was thinking of this all morning today about fears. I wrote an editorial in BTG a couple of years ago, right? I listed some of the phobias. You can look online. There's a whole list of them. On these psychology textbooks, though. And some of them are quite strange, actually. When you read them, you want to laugh, but then you think, well, I shouldn't laugh because people have these fears of them. They're not funny to them. But, you know, when you hear that somebody's afraid of noses or elbows or something, it's hard not to laugh, but it's scary to them for some reason. You know, I read is some people are afraid of nighttime. Imagine every single day you're just completely afraid that night is coming. Even adults, and of course children may be afraid of the dark, but even adults have this kind of thing. So what do people do when they have these kinds of fears? Of course, they go to psychologists or psychiatrists. There's a difference between the two, right? Psychiatrists, they can prescribe medicine, and that's what they do. Where do they do it? You know? I remember hearing a few years ago, I read a lecture by Suhotra Swami, and he was studying. He was quite an intellectual, so he would really look into things carefully. So he was studying about the mind. And he was wondering if he could get some insight from some devotee, psychiatrist, about the mind. So he talked to a devotee who was a psychiatrist, and he said he didn't know anything about the mind. Because what they do, basically, is they have a checklist. You know, if the person has insomnia, if the person has, you know, dry mouth, or whatever, they have their checklist, and if they have this checklist, then you give them this medicine. That's what they do. That's how you could practically do it online. In fact, they talk about that these days. Just, you know, cyber doctors, you just put in all your symptoms and then they'll tell you to go to doc, you know, get this medicine. So that's what they do. They really don't know anything about the mind in any kind of subtle way. And they don't really, you know, ask a lot of questions. They just check off the box. And so, all right, you have this problem, then take Prozac, and you have this problem, and you take this other drug. Of course, it's all mechanically based. It's the idea that it's all chemistry going on in the brain, and that's how we'll fix things, by adjusting the chemistry of the brain. So we have a little bit of a deeper perspective. We say it's about ahankar, it's about ahamma and mama, it's about identifying with the body and attaching to that. In fact, there's another verse. Well, we read this one here. This 396 that was at the end of the purport, Tadbhayam Davina Deha Sunya, it says the same thing. People who are attached to, and here it says, they always try to protect wealth, body, and friends. That's part of the anxiety. That's part of the fear. I'm afraid not only is my body going to be destroyed, but my family's body and my friends will be destroyed, and people are always afraid war is going to come, and the news is all filled with all the things that we're afraid of. So this is that Lord Brahma speaking, that verse that we read. That's Lord Brahma's prayers for the creative energy. And So there are so many other places actually in the Bhagavatam we read this same idea is there. That fear is a problem and we want to get rid of it. So I had another line of thought on this is I was thinking, are we being encouraged for liberation? We want to be free from fear. Isn't that the desire for liberation? What's being promoted here is not pure devotional service. What's being promoted, or we're being enticed by, if you do this, you'll become free from fear. So in other words, you'll get liberation. In fact, this comes up even in the Bhagavatam. I think I've mentioned this before, that I find it, I don't know if I'll say, interesting. We always glorify Kunti Devi. Vipada santu tasha shvat tatra tatra jagad vibho. Bhavato darshanam yat syat apunar bhava darshanam. It says, please send me more hardship, because when hardship comes, then I get to see you. So you think, well, that's all you need. She gets to see Krishna. So the verse doesn't have to go on. But the verse goes on, it says, but when I see you, then I'll never have to take birth again. Yay! It almost seems like that's the punchline to the verse. That's what she really wants. Apunar bhava darshanam. She wants liberation. But can that be, Kunti Devi? Is that really what she's looking for? So my resolution to this is that there, in the Bhagavatam, in many places, the speaker is speaking for other people's benefit. For those of you for whom seeing Krishna is not enough, well, you'll get free from birth and death. You'll get liberation. You don't have to worry about that. So that's there. That enticement is there. There's a place in the... of course, we have Karma Kanda, another kind of enticement. I think it's in Krishna's teachings, to Uddhava, where Krishna says that these enticements are like candy to get a child to take medicine. I used to know the verse, but I've forgotten it now. In any case, so this is maybe a kind of enticement. So even for us, in the beginning of devotional service, how many times did Prabhupada say, and you will go back home, back to Godhead? So yay! And I think this is what our happiness comes from. We're happily chanting because in the back of our minds, we're thinking, if I keep doing this, I'm going to go to heaven. Or, you know, it's not heaven, but that same idea might be there. If I keep doing this, then I'm going to go back home, back to Godhead. But what we should be thinking, our motivation should be, I'll get to serve Krishna. I'll get Krishna prema. I'll get love for Krishna. Now, even that may be tinged with when, then I'll be happy. Of course, that's a little tricky too, because we should want to be happy, we can't not want to be happy, you can say, because that's our constitution, Satchidananda, it's part of who we are. But we train ourselves in Krishna consciousness that that's not the highest thing, to just want to be happy. That's why I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, just to be happy. No, that's actually my position. I owe it to Krishna, you can say. That's why I exist. I exist to serve Krishna. And still, on the other side, because I'm not doing that, therefore I'm suffering in this material world, and therefore I have so much fear. Fear of so many things. We could list them. Is anybody not afraid of anything? I was thinking just how Pashupati Prabhu was in that accident, and now she's recovering, and I was thinking, oh, I shiver just to think of that kind of trauma. I've had a few in my life. I've been in a few. That's really a heavy thing. Your body gets banged around, and you break bones, and So I'm afraid of that happening to me again. I don't want that to happen again. And so many fears. But then it says in the Bhagavatam, actually, I was going to read this. This is like one of the most sobering things in the Bhagavatam. I read. It says, this is Narada Muni speaking in the fifth canto. He says, materialists are generally very attached to their present bodily comforts and to the bodily comforts they expect in the future. Therefore, they are always absorbed in thoughts of their wives, children, and wealth, and are afraid of giving up their bodies, which are full of stool and urine. Actually, the Sanskrit is kukalevara. So the stool and urine part is Prabhupada's translation of the kukalevara. So they are afraid of, so this materialists are afraid of giving up their bodies, which is full of stool and urine. If a person engaged in Krishna consciousness, however, is also afraid of giving up this body, what is the use of him, his having labored to study the Shastras? It was simply a waste of time. Whoa. So we're supposed to be getting something. That's the point. In the beginning of the Bhagavata, I think in the Prakrit and Shukadeva, in their conversation, I forget which one of them says it, but one of them says that at the end of life, one should not be afraid to face death. It's basically that. One should not be afraid to face death. And of course, Preacher Maharaj, he showed that. He said, let that snake bird or whatever creature, this mystical creature, this Brahmin boy has conjured up, come and bite me at once. I'm taking shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. But when you think of what this thing was, some kind of flying snake's going to come and get you. I think I'd be a little afraid if I heard that was coming. Report, he's just arrived in La Crosse and he's on his way there. He gets you on the asan. I think I'd jump up and start running, actually. But Pariksha Maharaj said, let him come. My mind is completely attached to the lotus feet of Krishna. So we're supposed to come to that stage by practicing Krishna consciousness. All right, let me stop here. Let me just read. Actually, these are nice verses. Let me read through them. Sri Narada said, O Vasudeva, when Maharaj Nibbhi had thus inquired from the nine yogendras about devotional service to the Lord, those best of saintly persons sincerely thanked the king for his questions and spoke to him with affection in the presence of the members of the sacrificial assembly and the Brahmana priests. Sri Kavi said, I consider that one whose intelligence is constantly disturbed by his falsely identifying himself with the temporary material world can achieve real freedom from fear only by worshipping the lotus feet of the infallible Supreme Lord. In such devotional service, all fear ceases entirely. Ladies, Madhumati Prabhu, Prabhui, one of the Shaktis, of 16 Shaktis of Vishnu is called Prabhui, which is the feminine for Prabhu. Prabhui. P-R-A-B-H-V-I. Prabhui.
Prabhui. Thank you for the nice castle. So many questions came to my mind, but I'll express one thought that maybe you can expand on. The fear was, as I was hearing you, the fear was, God, I'm in that situation. And so there was so much fear. But it made me think about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, where he says, Amara Boliye, what is it? Yes, Arkichunai. Basically, whatever I have, I give it to you. Whatever I do, it's for you.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to understand what that means, because here he's expressing, he's a grihastha, family, you know, job, whatever. And I was thinking that's an expression, his expression of giving everything to Krishna. And I'm assuming that takes ones away from that I, me and mine. So if you could say something on that.
Well, the secret, it seems, is using everything in Krishna's service and seeing it as belonging to Krishna. That was another thing when I was reviewing my notes last night. There was a really nice purport in Chaitanya Bhagavat by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur where he explains this principle. And he went through the whole list, things that we're attached to naturally, and family life especially, and how one thinks this thing or this person is not mine, this thing or person belongs to Krishna and needs to be engaged in Krishna's service. So that seems to be the solution here. Being attached to, you know, family and friends and so on, the idea seems to be attached to them without any connection to Krishna. Because Prabhupada in different places, he says, if that attachment is used in the service of Krishna, then it becomes purified. So a very practical way or practical thought is that, for example, money that we have, we can think that the money is not mine, it's Krishna's or it's Prabhupada's. So whatever money is coming in to the household, then I have to think, Prabhupada is just like in the temple of Brahmachari, things were a little different when everyone was living in an ashram in one temple, but if you needed anything, then you would have to go to the temple treasurer and you would have to ask for some of Krishna's money, the temple's money, to go out and buy a toothbrush or whatever. So you didn't have any money. It belonged to Krishna, belonged to the temple. So even in Grihastha life, that consciousness can be there, that I'm thinking that it's mine, but actually it's not mine, it's Krishna's. For one thing, Krishna's the one who's sending it. It might not come. I may not have a job. So many people can't find jobs. Or if you're one way, if you do sales, you can see this very clearly, because sometimes things sell and sometimes they don't sell. It's up to Krishna. So Krishna's sending the money, so it's his. So how I spend it, I should be thinking, now I have to go. Or just like you can think, well, if I had to ask Prabhupada for some money to do whatever I'm going to do right now, is it okay? Of course, we know in family life, because you have children, everything you buy is not necessarily, you know, Krishna conscious exactly. It's just part of raising children. But still, in principle, I think this is a good idea. So that principle, I think, can be applied in so many ways. So we see our family life in a more spiritual context. It's an ashram. It's meant to be an ashram, a place where we endeavor for I don't know if this is where this word comes from, but I've always tried to think about that. Because shrama means to work. Shrama evi kevalam. So means above, right, and beyond. So endeavoring for the beyond ashram. So grihastha ashram also, we're endeavoring for Krishna. Well, is this a kind of little bit of meditation, a reminder to ourselves, how we see our family life, what is our consciousness? So the idea is that if you see in that way, then the fear will go away, because you're taking shelter of Krishna. Abhaya charanaravindare. At the lotus feet of Krishna, all fear goes away. That's the principle, of course. If you're under the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, then nothing can hurt you. Even a nuke can't get through Krishna's lotus feet. That's the perfect shelter. Of course, it's a matter of consciousness. It's not a physical thing, but it's supposed to happen as we practice Krishna consciousness. Fear goes away. The more that connection is made. We'll probably give the example of a child. The child is afraid until the parent comes, then the child's not afraid anymore. My daddy's here. He can beat up anybody. So I'm protected.
So sometimes when I hear topics like this, I try to find something to give me like a little solace, because naturally this fear comes. So thinking of what you said earlier in the class about a grihastha, you know, that cannot practice devotion service or something to that effect, that there's some barrier there because of grihastha means attachment to family life. So to give ourselves solace, there's somewhere where Srila Prabhupada said in context of devotional service that if one practices Krishna consciousness in the context of Krishna consciousness, then even though he's in family life, he's not considered a grihastha, he's considered a grihastha brahmachari. Mm-hmm. Just thinking about that kind of gave me a little bit of relief if I can reach that standard. So can you explain a little more on that as to...
Well, I think that's the principle here. So you shouldn't be attached to your body and your family. So that's how we practice being detached, is by being Krishna conscious, by practicing Krishna consciousness. And of course, Brahmacharya Grihastha specifically means practicing Brahmacharya in the Grihastha context. Having sex only for procreation. So that's, of course, one of the principles of Krishna conscious grihastha life. Prangavindabhu?
Upananda Prabhu, Nanda Maharaj's older brother, he was trying to establish after this Borundev kidnap, what Nanda Maharaj explained them was a little strange that they are worshipping my son. And I thought Borundev was very intelligent, and he said, why did he worship my son? Anyway, at the end, it was very interesting that Upananda Prabhu was trying to establish Krishna's position as a supreme being, supreme person of Godhead. So then there was a back and forth discussion at the end. Of course, Nanda Maharaj says, you know, I heard the Gop Jati, the coward family, generally men at least, they get little bit bolder when they're old. So it's kind of like a putting Upananda Prabhu that he's not exactly aware of Krishna's position. So one of the seven things that he mentioned, that's how I counted, Jiva Goswami put that. He said, in the middle of the night, Krishna would just run as soon as the thunder was there, lightning, and knock the door, Baba, Baba, I'm so afraid of this fear. So this Krishna enjoyed this fear. And then Nanda Maharaj would hug him and comfort him, and he would love it. He loves it. He is hungry for it. And Nanda Maharaj also. So it seems like Krishna is enjoying the fear.
Krishna enjoys everything. That's the point of Goloka Vrindavan. All of these things intensify the happiness. As you're mentioning Upananda, remind me, I heard recently, that Radha and Krishna, their families, in all of Nanda Maharaj and his brothers, their names all have Nanda. So Nanda means Ananda. And on the other side, Radharani is Rishabhanu. Bhanu means light. So you have the happiness on one side and the light on the other, Radha Krishna, happiness and light. So when you come into the shelter of the happiness and light, then all fear goes away, especially light. I was thinking this metaphor is often used. You're always afraid in the dark. So in the light of Srimati Radharani, the Bhanu dynasty, then all the fear goes away. Janashtami Prabhu.
Sometimes it seems that when we use the word fear, it's hard for all of us to identify. You know, we're more accustomed to speaking in terms of stress, but they're actually the same thing, right?
Yeah, anxiety.
Yeah. Here's a... I'm just reading from the purport. So-called religious activities executed in the bodily conception of life are always accompanied by fear and anxiety about the ultimate result. The devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead frees one from fear and anxiety. It's situated in the platform of Vaikuntha, the spiritual plane, where there's no fear or anxiety. I think this comes from Giriraj Swami. A little pastime of Prabhupada, a devotee asked Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, how do we know that we're making advancement in Krishna consciousness? And Prabhupada's response was, how much anxiety are you in? Have you heard that?
For Krishna.
I guess that was, I guess it's how much anxiety are you in for Krishna? That was it. So it does appear, you know, that in the process of executing devotional service, you know, there's a stress factor, and I'm not sure if that's, you know, based on the bodily conception or if it's based upon, you know, just kind of the internal energy inducing, you know, more surrender, more crying to the holy name, or, you know, do you have any thoughts on that analysis?
One thing I read technically in psychology, they say stress is the outside force. Your reaction to it is your anxiety. So pressure is stress, right? So, yeah, Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya's in anxiety. How can I spread all these fruits of love of God? I'm just one person. I can't do it by myself. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says, we accept anxiety on ourselves to help relieve Lord Chaitanya's burden of anxiety. So that's purifying, of course, that's the idea. Thinking always how to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. And there's this nice verse in the section of the second canto where it talks about how everything comes from penance. Even Krishna says, you know, the creation comes from my penance. Which I always think, well, how does Krishna do penance? But in any case, the idea is that you have to do penance. So Prabhupada says in one purport that the penance is to accept the order of the spiritual master in whatever hardship one undertakes. That's the perfect penance. That's what purifies us. So taking on anxiety and headaches, and any service you do, there's going to be some antagonism. There's going to be something going against you. It's always anything you try to accomplish doesn't happen automatically. Don't just snap your fingers and it happens. You have to work. You have to. There's certain headaches involved. So taking on that anxiety, that's purifying somehow. That anxiety will remove ultimately, or eventually, gradually, it will remove the anxiety that, or the fear and so on connected with this body. That's part of the process of Krishna consciousness. Apparently, as Srila Prabhupada explained it, take on these hardships for Krishna, as he demonstrated himself, of course, how much hardship he took on for Krishna. So that may involve fear also. Just like one of the main fears people have is public speaking. It's funny, it's so many people, it's the top of their list. They're more afraid of public speaking than dying. So that's all the kind of fear we have to maybe take on in Krishna consciousness, or preaching, of course, going out in the street. Not just physical harm. I was actually, Hari Prayana Prabhu and Madhumati and some others, we took this teacher training course. And one of the things there is that when you give a presentation, you're supposed to have an overall aim. So I was joking, Hari Prayana Prabhu, I said, my overall aim is that when I speak is I just don't want to embarrass myself. That's my overall aim. So this is a fear, obviously, to be embarrassed that my ego is, you know, and my face will turn red or whatever. So we have so many of these kinds of fears. And then there are, of course, the more gross fears, physical fear. But these things will eventually, they'll go away when we take on difficulties or anxiety on behalf of Krishna. Divya?
Well, I got it. You know, this whole discussion on liberation, if you, this verse, 2nd Canto, 10th chapter, 6th verse, Muktir Hitvan Yata Rupam Swarupena Vyastiti. It seems to me that, like, there's, I think one devotee went through and found about 35 different definitions of liberations or understanding of it. Mm-hmm. But the Vaishnava liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position, you know, just serving Krishna, that's it. So in that sense, it's not really outside of the parameters of Uttama Bhakti, you know, to be situated like that, you know, and that means also free from the bodily conception.
Yeah, well, the point I was making, if your motivation is to be free from fear,
right,
then is that the desire for liberation? It seems like it is.
Right.
Divyanga Prabhu? We need to have a drone, don't you? Fly that thing around.
This is off topic, but I was just curious about the sneeze janma. How did the birth come with the sneeze? I got to hear this, because I don't remember that. I don't remember Ikshvaku taking birth from a sneeze.
I think it's just stated.
And whose sneeze?
His father, Vaivaswatamanu, I guess, is his father.
Just sneezed and that was it?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, it's like Lord Brahma. He creates from all different parts of his body. Of course, Brahma's Brahma, yeah.
I thought I'd maybe get some details.
No, I don't. I think it just comes in one of these, you know, lineages. And I was going to look it up to verify it, but I didn't do it. But I think it's just mentioned that's how he was born. Yeah, Lord Brahma came out of the nose also. Of course, Lord Brahma's nose. Braha, I mean, Lord Braha came out of Lord Brahma's nose. Hari Prayana Prabhu.
I was thinking about your point about enticements. So I had a different understanding of these things. I just wanted to go through those three examples you pointed out. One of them was Kunti Devi and Apunarbhavam. My understanding was, I mean, Kunti, obviously, she's in a spiritual body. She doesn't have a material body. So for her to say this is absurd, because she is never going to die. And she's never going to take birth. She's eternally going to be like that. So then the conclusion would be, this is like a sanchari bhav, where extreme humility. Dainya, the word, which means that she thinks she's in a material body, she's going to die someday. And so she's expressing that in that prayer. The other thing about the Yogendras, whether this is pure devotional service or not, certainly one could understand this as listing a property of devotional service. Yes. Rather than enticement. For example, Rupa Goswami says, Kleshaghi, that you will destroy karma, right, and all that. But you know, one way to look at it would be enticement, and that probably is true from one angle. And the other would be that it's just a property of devotional mm-hmm. service that's being impartially presented. And then there was a third example about Shastra. Well, what's the use? I studied all this Shastra, I don't want to die now. This actually was expressed to me by a devotee, it's funny, just in the last few weeks. And where that person was coming from was, if I don't utilize this knowledge to get Krishna, then my endeavor ended abruptly, prematurely. And so that's why the lamentation.
Right. It can be just theoretical knowledge. We have to put it into practice and try to really grasp it into our hearts. All right, it's 9:00. Let's stop here. Shri Prabhupada.